Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Speak Truth Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Gideon, and I've got my good friend and one of our pastoral interns and a man who does a lot here at EFBC, Kurt Denning, here with me today. And, Kurt, glad to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you very much. The last podcast we shot, we were talking about Islamic belief.
Yep.
And you asked the question, or you were getting ready to ask the question, I can't remember, if Islam, you know, is it considered a peaceful religion?
That's right. Yep.
And we held off on that question until this podcast. And so today we're going to try to answer that question as best we can. And then I'm going to have you towards the end, you're going to compare that with, you know, some of the things that we read out of the Hadith and the Quran.
Right.
And then we're going to conclude that by you reading a passage from the Holy Bible.
Yep.
And comparing that to Christianity. So, well, let's go ahead and get started, you know. So the question is Islam a peaceful religion?
Yep.
And really, it depends on who you ask.
Exactly.
Some who practice Islam are going to say yes. Others who practice Islam are going to say no. But really what we want to get down to is what does the Quran actually teach? And so, of course, Islam has sought to defend its reputation as those who do not advocate terror. So we need to ask the question, does Islam advocate peace? And can we look at history to answer that question? Can we look at the life of Muhammad to answer that question? Can we look at the Quran to answer that question? And can we look at the Hadith to answer that question? So another way would be to look at it, was Muhammad, the founder of Islam, was he a person of peace? And we can know that whether he was or not by looking at his teachings. Okay, so we're going to look at that, some of those things here in a moment. I would go as so far as to say that I do not believe, according to my research and what I've done, that that we cannot, you know, and when you look at history as well, when you look at the writings of the Hadith and the Quran, and when you look at Islamic history, I don't think that we can come to the conclusion that Islam is a peaceful religion.
Right.
I just don't think we can come to that conclusion.
I agree.
Now, in all fairness, Christianity has its own warts and and bruises.
Yeah.
You know, we think about the Crusades.
Absolutely.
And there were many who were killed at the hands of war, at the hands of the Crusades, at the hands of Christians.
Yes.
And so Christians, you know, in all fairness, we have our own ugly past of not being peaceful and trying to use force to convert. This was also, you know, we think about the Crusades, but you can even go so far as what happened to a lot of Native Americans and, you know, even here. In the West, with forced conversions and so forth, like and things like that. But you can't go to the Christian Bible, especially the New Testament, and say that it promotes religious war. It promotes jihad. As a matter of fact, the Bible does not teach that, and we'll show that here in just a moment. But you can't say the same thing about the Quran.
Right.
You just can't. Now, does that mean that all followers of Islam believe in holy war? No. There are a lot of people, you know, there are some here even in our own community who practice Islamic beliefs who are very peaceful people.
Yes.
So we don't want to make a blanket statement and say that all people who practice Islam are radical in their interpretation of the Hadith or the Quran or their understanding of religious jihad. There are some people who see jihad, some Muslims who see jihad as nothing more than battling against the sinfulness of your own flesh.
That's true,
Okay, and so there would be those who say, well, jihad is not meant to be a holy war. for the purpose of forced conversion, but it's more in reference to mortifying the desires of your flesh.
Right.
Now, I'm going to show us today that that is not the proper interpretation.
Exactly.
Right. The proper interpretation of jihad, according to the Quran, is not the mortification of the flesh. It does include forced submission to Islamic beliefs and practices. So, yeah, so we could say that the majority of Muslims are peaceful, law-abiding people. But there's also the case that that the majority of Muslims are unfamiliar with what the Quran actually teaches. And I've seen this in my own, you know, mission work around, you know, in Islamic countries. Is in most cases, they don't even know what the Quran teaches or says about holy war. So just a couple of things here I want to look at. I will also say that the averaged Muslim is not encouraged to read the Quran. A lot who practice Islam can't even read Arabic.
Yep.
And they're not encouraged to read it in any other language.
Correct.
So if you know Arabic and you don't read the Quran, well, you're not going to know what it teaches. But if you practice Islam and you don't know Arabic, you're not encouraged to read it in any other language. As a matter of fact, they would see that as a corruption.
Yep.
And so you've got many people who practice Islam who don't even know what the Quran actually teaches. And the same could be said about many Christians.
Yeah, that's true.
But let's start by just, we'll start this podcast by examining the word Islam to begin with. And so what does that word actually mean? Well, first of all, and I said this last week, we need to understand that Muslims are not Islam. Okay, Islam is the belief. Muslims are those who practice that belief. Okay, so we need to distinguish between the people and the ideology.
Right.
The criticism of Islam is not criticism of all Muslims.
Correct.
But to understand what Islam is, we need to examine the teachings from the Quran and examples of Muhammad himself. So there are some people who say that the word Islam itself means peace.
Right.
Or they assume that it means peace.
Yeah.
But in reality, the word means submission
Yes.
or surrender. That's the literal translation of the word. Mark Dury is a linguistic and theological scholar, and he says this: in its original meaning, a Muslim was someone who surrendered in warfare. Muhammad's famous phrase, "Aslim Taslam," means surrender or submit to Islam, and you will be safe. And so, you know, Muhammad would actually say that, you know, surrender and submit to Islam,
right,
and you will be safe.
Exactly.
And so the idea was, if you don't submit to Islam,
yeah,
then you're going to be forced to submit to Islam,
right,
through holy war.
Right.
So,
only that, but you know, I know, I mean, this translates into modern context too, in the sense that, you know, they don't necessarily think that you have to become a Muslim, but if you choose not to become a Muslim, you're penalized.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like either you'll have to pay some kind of tax or something of that nature too. So we see how that translates into today too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if we take that, and that's a good point, you take that meaning of Islam and you actually come to the conclusion that it means peace only after surrender.
Exactly. Yeah.
So submit, surrender is the more literal term. The idea of peace comes in. Where did that even come from? Well, peace after surrender in warfare or subjugation. Once you've been, you know, once you've been overcome, then there is peace. So that's actually the idea behind Islamic belief.
Yeah.
Now, so even if you look at the word Islam, you even see in that word that it's not a word of peace.
Right.
It's a word of force. subjugation, surrender.
Yeah.
And so what is the meaning of jihad? Well, the Arabic word jihad means to struggle or to strive.
Right.
It's sometimes ambiguous whether this refers to spiritual or physical violent structure. And we talked about our struggle. We talked about this just a few moments ago. Yeah. There would be Muslims who disagree on how to interpret that.
Right.
They would say, well, jihad refers to, you know, a spiritual struggle, violence against your, you know, your sin. But is that the way it's, presented in the scripture?
Right.
So here's your quote from Quran. And strive for Allah with the striving due to him. He has chosen you and has not placed you upon and has placed and has not placed upon you in the region any difficulty. So and so we would see that the word jihad would be jihadu, jihadai are the words that are using. He says, and strive, jihadu, okay, for Allah with the striving, jihadai, due to him. So in that sense, you would say, somebody could easily say, well, jihad is striving for Allah with the striving that is due him. And so in that sense, you might say, okay, that can be interpreted either way. But there are other examples. There are many examples in the Quran where jihad is referred to as a violent struggle. Here's another quote. Fighting is prescribed for you, and ye dislike it. But it is possible that you dislike a thing which is good for you, and that you love a thing which is bad for you. Indeed, those who have believed and those who have immigrated and fought jihad in the cause of Allah, those expect the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving and merciful. So again, if you have believed and you have immigrated and fought in jihad, then you you can expect to receive mercy from Allah.
Exactly.
And so that's why you see so many, you know, bombers that are willing to, suicide bombers, because they believe that to die in jihad, which is what they would interpret, which is what they think they're doing, would, just like with 9/11, you know, that those men who flew those planes into the Twin Towers, into the Pentagon, and then the one that ultimately crashed in the field, those were Islamic fundamentalists who were seeking religious or, you know, religious and physical jihad. They were making holy war.
Exactly.
Because they believed that to die in holy war is to have immediate access into paradise, where, you know, 7,000 virgins are waiting on you, or, or whatever it may be. But still, at this point, we still have some ambiguity about what does jihad actually mean. Even with those two passages I read, we see that jihad is taught, but it's not clear at this point, is it a physical warlike struggle, or is it just merely spiritual? Well, let's keep reading and look at some other quotes. Sometimes they'll refer to a greater jihad and a lesser jihad. The Quran doesn't make that distinction, though, but they do. They'll say, you know, the greater jihad is the physical religious jihad war, and the lesser jihad is more of that mortification of the flesh or whatever. But here's what the Quran: no equal are those believers who sit at home and receive no hurt, and those who strive and fight in the cause of Allah with their goods and their persons. So we see there a difference, that they are fighting the cause of Allah with their goods and their persons. Allah hath granted a grade higher to those who strive and fight with their goods and person than those who sit at home. Until all in faith hath Allah promised good, but those who strive and fight hath he distinguished above those who sit at home by a special reward. So even the Quran says, you know, if you strive and fight,
Yeah.
Then you're held to a higher honor.
Exactly.
By Allah.
Yeah. Well, and I just can't understand how you could see it after reading that. How can you see it as merely a spiritual?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That seems to be very physical as well.
Well, it even gets more clear.
Okay.
Yeah. As we read on, I think you're so.
Yeah.
We started off with some ambiguity. I have a hard time saying that word, but I think I got it out. But the more we read, the clearer it becomes. Okay, so we can see from the passage I just read that obvious that's referring to physical fighting, and it's regarded by Allah as a greater endeavor, as the greatest endeavor. And by the way, the Sunnis and the Shiites, neither one of them make a distinction between greater jihad and lesser jihad. Mm. But here's you another quote. A man came to Allah's messenger and said, "Instruct me as to such a deed as equals jihad." He replied, "I do not find such a deed that equals jihad." It's the greatest deed.
Okay.
Then he added, "Can you, while the Muslim fighter is in the battlefield, enter your mosque to perform prayers without cease and fast and never break your fast?" The man said, "But who can do that?" Abu Hurairah added, "The Mujahid, the Muslim fighter, is rewarded even for the footsteps of his horse while he wanders about tied in a long rope." So the Muslim fighter is not only rewarded for his fight in religious jihad, but also he's rewarded for the footsteps that his horse takes.
Yeah.
So we see that this is much more than just a fighting against, you know, spiritual and temptation, but this is a call to physical violence against anyone who is not Muslim.
Yeah.
So leading scholar David Cook argues that an attempt to present jihad in a purely spiritual terms are completely unsupported by the evidence and only occur in the writings for Western audiences.
Mm.
So they've done some things to make it more acceptable into the Western eyes, but those who write in Arabic or other Muslim majority language realize that it is pointless to present jihad as anything other than militant warfare. Mm. So those who are linguistic scholars, theological scholars, those who study Arabic and Islamic languages, they would say there's no other way to interpret jihad but as a militant warfare.
Yeah.
And this has been the history of Islam.
Exactly.
You know, and so even their own history supports these truths. But in fact, jihad as physical fighting for the spread of Islam is so prominent in the traditional teaching of Islam that it is sometimes referred to as the sixth pillar of Islam.
Right. Exactly.
So we know we looked at that last week where Islam has five pillars, and some would even say, well, there's six, and the sixth is militant warfare.
Yeah.
So, in earliest hadith collections, sections on jihad immediately follow those of the five pillars. Mm-hmm. So you have the five pillars, and then you have teachings on religious jihad.
Right.
So the primary meaning of jihad has always been physical fighting.
Right.
That's what it means. And this applies to the Quran, the hadith, Islamic history, and classical Islamic hermeneutics.
Mm-hmm.
David Cook cites the standard definition of jihad given in the new edition of the Encyclopedia of Islam is this: in law, according to the general doctrine, and in historical tradition, the jihad consists of military action with the object of expansion of Islam and, if need be, of its defense.
Mm. Yep.
So even the, you know, Islamic Encyclopedia would acknowledge it as a military action for the expansion of Islam or for the defense of Islam.
Right.
So right now, you know, all the evidence stands against the fact that it, you know, it's not a peaceful religion at all. I'm going to share some final verses here and just kind of summary. that really speak clear to okay. what our discussion, but here's you a quote from the teaching to the Quran. But when the forbidden months are past, then fight and slay the pagans wherever you find them. Seize them, beleaguer them, lie in wait for them in every stratagem. But if they repent and establish regular prayers and practices, regular charity, then open the way for them. For Allah is often forgiving and most merciful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much clearer do you have to get than that, right? Find them, seize them, beleaguer them, lie in wait for them, strategize against them.
Well, and actually, in the life, I mean, we see it in the life of Muhammad too.
Yeah,
Muhammad was doing this. In
oh yeah,
his own
absolutely.
Life. So
yeah, and then also, you know, marrying underage girls.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
well. Yeah. Again, another quote: "Fight those who believe not in Allah, nor the last day, nor hold that forbidden which hath been forbidden by Allah and His messengers." Nor acknowledge the religion of truth, even if they are of the people of the book, until they pay, and this is what you made reference, the jizya, which is willing submission, and feel themselves subdued.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you fight, you make religious war, militant war, for the purpose of forced conversion.
Right.
To subdue the pagan.
Yep.
Let me give you a few more quotes here. A prophet, O prophet, fight against the disbelievers and the hypocrites and be harsh upon them, and their refuge is hell, and wretched is the destination. Allah hath purchased of the believer their persons and their goods. For theirs is the garden. They fight in his cause and slay and are slain. And a promise binding on him in truth through the law, the gospel, and the Quran. And who is more faithful to this covenant than Allah? So again, we see the call to fight, the call to arms. Again, O ye who believe, fight the unbelievers who gird you about, and let them find firmness in you, and know that Allah is with you and those who fear Him. So notice that these commands for militant warfare against unbelievers is, these are straight commands.
Exactly.
In the scripture.
Yeah.
We would call these imperatives.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we have, is that they are, you know, Muslims are commanded mm-hmm. through the Quran, the Hadith, to engage in religious jihad, militant warfare against unbelievers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, make no mistake about it, even though there are people who practice Islamic beliefs who are good citizens and mm-hmm. peaceful people, it is without question that the Quran and the Hadith and history itself and Muhammad, it is clear that it is not a peaceful religion.
Yeah.
It is a religion that is built upon violence and terror with the hopes of forced conversion.
Right.
And now you compare that with Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and I think you were going to read a passage for us.
Yeah, so while I'm opening up there, I did have a couple other things to say.
Yeah, please.
That with jihad, there are some who would say that it's actually not an offensive war, that they're not really on the offense, but that they're just on the defense.
You're right.
And so they would say, oh no, that we only engage in holy war when we are being attacked and when our religion is being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason why you see things like 9/11. They thought that, you know, that America was essentially attacking them, but that just doesn't play out.
No, when you look at the verses that we read,
right,
and it was, it's a call to evangelize.
Yeah.
I mean, there is evangelism within Islam,
mm-hmm.
But it's a call to evangelize. It's a call to spread Islam. It's a call. It's a call to, you know, destroy the West, Israel, and a call not only to protect, but to subdue.
Exactly. Well, and that was the last thing I was going to say is that this idea of submission. ultimately is to set up, you know, kind of a government.
Yeah.
And they, and what they ultimately want is to set up Sharia law, mm-hmm. law courts.
Yeah.
And they would ultimately judge affairs through through their law.
Yeah.
Through, and obviously, you know, so it's just, it's not good.
Well, and the reality is that, you know, Islam is spreading at a greater pace than Christianity.
Yeah.
And we have to wonder how, you know, how much longer until Islam takes over.
Yeah.
But the reality is it's the reason Islam is growing at the rate that it is because they have babies.
Yeah.
I mean, Islam, I mean, the reality is, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but they are out procreating us.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that it is spreading at the rate that it is. In the Islamic culture, you're going to have, you know, they're going to have 5, 6, 7 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And where in America, we, you know, we abort babies.
Yeah.
Or we think we have 1 or 2 and then that's enough, you know.
Yeah.
And so the one of the reasons that we're being, out, you know, overrun is not because a failure to preach the gospel. And I guess some cases it could be.
Yeah.
But they're out procreating.
Yeah.
And and so, and it's strategic on their part.
It is.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. So let me go ahead and read this. So this
And by the way, the reason I'm having he's going to read this passage is because I want to show you the contrast from what we just read in portions of the Hadith in the Quran. And I want to contrast that with what we read in the Bible.
Right. So looking at Romans 12, starting in verse 1, it says, Paul says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. And then if you skip over to verse 9 in chapter 12, verse 14, it says, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Yeah, and so we see the contradiction in teaching there.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't mean that Christians ought to be pacifists. In no way are we teaching pacifism. But in no way do we teach taking vengeance upon our enemies. We do believe in protecting ourselves. And we will protect ourselves, but we're not going to try to spread Christianity through religious war,
right?
And because that's not what the Bible teaches.
Mm-hmm.
But we do stand ready to protect ourselves as a nation.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
And but anyway, thank you for that verse, and thank you for our conversation today.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in. Please like, share, subscribe, pass this on to others. Until we meet again, serve the King. Mm-hmm.